Hi, and welcome to Jesus Over Everything, a five-day-a-week variety show that mixes encouragement, the Bible, practical how-tos, and fantastic guests for the listener on the go. I'm Lisa Whittle, and I welcome you to just 5 minutes with me, which I trust and pray will be 5 minutes well spent. Jordan Lee Dooley is back today on Jesus Over Everything, and we continue our conversation on some of our struggles as women of all ages, how to really find our purpose in life, and of course, Jesus who makes us all well. We had such a great time talking and so much to cover in and out of the pages of Jordan's new book, Own Your Everyday, that I felt we needed to give this 2 days. If you didn't listen to yesterday, after today, you'll want to go back and do that. But listen now as Jordan and I wrap up the second half of our chat on Joe. So let's talk about getting unstuck. I absolutely love this part of the book because you not only tell us where we're stuck, but you do something that I think is very important. You give us alternative actions for each of the areas. This is so important because a lot of books might say, okay, here's the problem. You need to overcome shame, for instance, but they don't give us the action that helps us overcome it. And you do. You say, for example, overcome shame with sharing. I love that you do this, Jordan. I want you to talk about that a little, sort of the replacement actions for our stuck places, because I think this is very important.
Absolutely. So I am 1000% an action-oriented person. I think this is why sometimes like church was hard for me maybe growing up, because I'm like, this just all seems so spiritual. Like, isn't there something I can do sometimes, you know? And I think I've learned how that works. But at the same time, I also know many people feel that frustration. So for me, it's always been very important to be like, look, this takes two to tango. So even if you have faith in that the Lord will work it out, I truly believe he will. But there are some actual things you can move your booty and do. And so, you know, it's, again, it's not about earning, but it's about like, if you want to see improvements, like you really can, you know, think through what are the action steps that maybe you can take to begin to replace the energy that you're wasting or getting stuck in some area on. And so with the shame by sharing, you know, I just kind of share my story of, I had really struggled with grief my first year of college. My grandmother, who was very, very close to me, passed away. And that story kind of unraveled, especially having my Enneagram 3 type. You know, I was like, okay, well, like, I'll just pull my life together. And I just started doing all these things that kind of made me feel good, or maybe made me kind of look good. You know, I had good grades. I, you know, had a boyfriend. I went to the parties. Like, I did all the things. And I was like, this still isn't working. And what started to happen is I really felt like I had to fit into a standard. And so I started, you know, I really wanted to do something kind of in honor of my grandmother passing away, but it also kind of became very twisted very quickly because I had a lot of body image shame and a lot of, I've always kind of struggled with that. And so when I was in a season of grief and, you know, transition, trying to find my place in college and all of that, from the freshman year to the sophomore year, I really struggled with body image and started really excessively exercising, severely limiting calories. It became really unhealthy. I mean, I lost a lot of weight unnecessarily. It became something that was more like an obsession rather than good intentions. And so, you know, a lot of that was just because of a shame that I had of, you know, okay, I've messed up a few times. I know that probably wouldn't check the good, you know, church girl box. And, you know, I don't really like my body. So what I could control was my diet and how much I exercise. So I would be up at midnight, like doing jumping jacks just to hit my calorie number. And like, it was crazy. So anyways, I started to feel like kind of stuck in that. And after I chose to run a half marathon in honor of my grandma that following year. So this had been going on for just under a year. Shortly after the half marathon, I felt like I had kind of hit a milestone. So I don't know, just for me, it slowly started to get less and less severe. And there were a few action steps that were helpful with that once I started to realize like, okay, I'm getting shin splints. And like, okay, I have a nerve damage in my foot. And like, okay, this is not healthy to be running and exercising and putting my body through this to this degree. So I slowly started to back off and it kind of like naturally over time got less severe. But what I found was that I had never actually like even kind of opened up about it. It wasn't really till my senior year, so it was 2 years later, that I was finally like, I think I was on the verge of a possible eating disorder. Like, I don't think I've ever even kind of talked about it. I just kind of tucked it away, like, okay, it's not so bad now. Like, we're good. You know, no reason to talk about it. So I never really brought it up or opened up about it. But then once I got into some really life-giving community and just had some, you know, space, kind of like in that space I was telling you about, packaging these things in the closet and, you know, getting involved in community and, you know, starting to find a place where I was like, oh, that is something I struggled with. As other women would open up about their struggles with it, it kind of became evident to me of like, oh, maybe it would be helpful. Maybe this actually is still kind of sitting in the back of my mind and heart. And actually, like, because what would happen is I'd still kind of fall into these it wasn't to the same degree or extreme, but I'd still, you know, when you track how many calories is in an apple for a really long time, you still know that even if you're not physically tracking it, right? So I'm like, this behavior was kind of like popping up in different places, and it was all rooted in shame, not feeling pretty enough, not feeling good enough, you know, needing to control something. So even though it was less alarming to my parents or to my family, and you know, it seemed to be more under control, it wasn't something I was completely free of either. And so then I remember my friend and I, my senior year, we were driving around Southern Indiana or something after, you know, one weekend, and she started to open up about some struggles she was having when it came to, like, she had different behavior. I never struggled with bulimia or anything like that, but that was kind of her story. So she started to open up about that. And I was like, wait, just because I didn't do that specifically doesn't mean I don't share the same root problem, right? So we had this, I just kind of opened up as she opened up. And it was crazy how much just talking about it and almost like confessing it and bringing it out there was so healing. And I was like, oh, it's actually not so scary to talk about. Like, no one looks at me as like, oh my gosh, you're the girl with the problem, you know? And shame, that's really like what it does, is it not only makes us see a distorted view of who we are, but it also gives us, it like wants us to hide those things. And so getting to just bring them out into the open and kind of openly confess of what we're struggling with and just be honest about it does create a lot of freedom. And so that's why I say you kind of overcome shame by sharing. I mean, that's something Brene Brown talks about a lot too, you know? And so I don't know, it just, I kind of learned through that experience and really wanted to encourage women, like, I don't care what it is, even if you think it's like making you the worst person in the world, the more that you open up about it, whether it's to a friend, to God, to, you know, a mentor, all of the above, your mom, like, you just have to start talking about it. And so that was really life-changing for me. And I felt like that gave me a lot of freedom from that one little percent that was still kind of hanging on, that one nagging every now and then, it would still become like a thing I started to worry about. And it just kind of helped me break that completely. So, yeah, I truly believe that was, you know, it, replacing the energy we expend or waste trying to hide something in shame or really struggling with anything, and replacing that with something that's more rooted in purpose and intentionality and faith and joy, I think that's really where change starts to occur. So we really need to make those steps to switch the way we are expending that energy.
Yeah, I agree completely. And you talk about other things that we get stuck in, and you give the replacement actions for those as well. It's not just the shame thing that we deal with, but other places that we get stuck, and you give us those actions. And I really do think that it's powerful to say, not this, but this, because we do get a lot of advice, or we do get a lot of counsel that says, hey, don't be stuck in shame. And we get that. And we understand that. And we appreciate the counsel and the hug and the, all of those things. And we really do, but we also need something to replace it with. And so for you to say, like, this is what sharing does for you, this is how it releases shame, I think that's very important, because, you know, a lot of us feel scared to maybe share things that we've gone through, and we need to know what the benefit of it is, quite honestly. And when people understand the benefits of things like sharing our stuff, then they understand why it's important to do it. And that's why I feel like that portion of your book is really powerful and it's going to impact a lot of people. I want to talk a minute about this thing called imposter syndrome, which I know what that is, but maybe some other people don't know what that is. I think all of us struggle with this a little bit in some way, especially maybe when we're elevated to a position that we don't feel qualified for, or that we feel we deserve, or, you know, there could be a lot of different scenarios with it. But I want you to tell people who are listening that may not know what it is, what it is. And then in the book, you give some ways to overcome it. So maybe give us a way to overcome imposter syndrome if that's something we struggle with.
Yeah. So basically, imposter syndrome is feeling like you're a fraud, right? For whatever you're doing, whether it's, you know, people, it's the fear of, are people going to think that I'm not what I say I am, right? Are people going to know that I don't have enough experience, and then therefore, you know, question if I'm even worth doing this, right? When I first started my little Etsy store in college, I'd be answering customer service emails from biology class. And I'm like, I feel like such a fraud, right? Like, this isn't professional. This isn't fancy. Like, they don't probably even realize that I'm probably should be set, like, studying about the nucleus of a cell, you know? And so it's just that feeling of, I feel like a phony. I feel like I'm not qualified to do this. I feel like a fraud. Regardless of what it is that we're doing, whether it's being a wife or running a small business or writing a book or whatever it is. And so, you know, when I first started that, it all began because my mom had given me permission. She basically said, when I told her that I wasn't sure I wanted to pursue the degree I had, which was in healthcare administration, which is super random. I actually have never used that. She, you know, I don't know what I want to do. I graduate in a year, like I'm stuck, you know? And, she just looked at me. She goes, okay, well, just try some stuff then. I was like, Mom, that's the worst advice ever. What does that even mean? You know? And she's like, well, you know, obviously you have responsibilities, then you still have to do this stuff. But at the same time, like, you've never really given yourself any kind of freedom or flexibility to try some things that you like. And so I think, you know, what I kind of learned from that, that led to eventually starting the Etsy shop. There were several other things that I had tried that didn't really pan out. But, you know, doing that as kind of a little like side thing, and then it kind of turned into more than a side thing. And then all of a sudden I was like, wait, I don't have to work in health administration now. This is crazy. You know, it was simply because she said, just try something even before you figure it out or before you have a perfect plan. And so that's really what I did. And I remember feeling when I was first starting, like, oh my gosh, I don't want to be seen starting small. What if this fails? What are my friends going to think? You know, and that's kind of imposter syndrome at work. So in the book, I share a couple things, you know, reasons why we don't allow ourselves to start small or just take a small step or try something. I mean, in just several years, like, it's evolved into so much more than a little Etsy store, you know? And it's crazy to think just how that happens. And so, you know, in the book, I was like, I think a lot of times we don't try things or we don't step into things or we begin to feel like an imposter when we have these ideas or start small because we're afraid of other people's expectations of us. You know, I expected, my parents wanted me to go work in corporate America. And my mom was like, nope, we don't expect that at all. Actually, just try some stuff you like. So that was eye-opening. We also, I think, you know, other people's opinions. It's difficult when you are maybe branching out and trying something new or exploring a new avenue, or, you know, maybe the youngest in your company or whatever. I think that can be really hard if you're just trying something new and your great aunt Mildred at Christmas dinner asks you what you do and you don't really have a clear like answer of, I'm an accountant, you know? Yeah. And then you feel like such a failure, you know, and you're like, I'm just figuring it out. I'm doing, you know, baristaing. I think that's a word. I don't know if that's a verb. I'm getting my master's and I'm working on creating a nonprofit. Like, everyone's doing different things. And if it's not something you can just say in one quick label, it can create some like concern from people that you want approval from. Or if you're, you know, maybe the youngest teacher at your school or a first time author or whatever, it can begin to feel like, well, people even think I'm legit, you know? So those are just a few of the reasons. There's several other reasons, but, you know, for me, the action steps that I was saying, you know, you don't just overcome that by like deciding you're confident one day. But instead, I think the best way to overcome that is to be willing to admit that you're starting small and to be coachable. That's one of my biggest takeaways, is like, one of the reasons we feel like it's an imposter is because we live in this world that's like, fake it till you make it. And I'm like, or don't, you know, actually just try something.
Yeah.
And ask those who know more than you, like, SOS, I don't know how to wrangle these six-year-olds. Older teacher, can you help me? You've done this for 20 years. Instead of just trying to be like, I got this, I'm good, like, they shouldn't judge me just because I'm new, you know? And so it's really kind of just a perspective shift of, how can I maybe be a little bit more humble in this situation? Because I think it's really like our egos that cause, you know, that feeling of imposter syndrome, because we want to be seen as successful and legit and, you know, whatever. And so kind of just turning around and saying, you know what, I'm going to be coachable and I'm going to be willing to be taught, even if it hurts my pride. That can actually really help because people, A, feel respected by that, and B, you actually learn something without feeling like you have to figure it all out on your own. So that was a big thing that helped me, was just even starting to ask for help and say, you know, reach out to other people who are doing similar things that I was and saying, how do you run this part of this? You know, where do you get your packing peanuts from? You know, and just being willing to kind of make yourself small, because we otherwise want to be, the reason we don't like being seen starting small is because we don't want to feel small. But the reality is we're all pretty small. So I think just allowing to kind of be small and be coachable and ask for help can be so helpful in that. Because then it's like, oh, what am I trying to prove now? Nothing, you know, so.
Yeah. So many, many, many good things. And FYI, your mom sounds amazing. And I really want her to mother me, because she's got the most amazing advice. Clearly you have picked up on some great things from her, because she's got some really sage advice. So I want to talk purpose for a little bit. Your book has been called The Girlfriend's Guide to a Purpose-Driven Life for the Next Generation, which that's a great thing to be called, because a Purpose-Driven Life book is, to me, one of the best books ever written. It's such an evergreen manual. And the book is much more about just purpose, but it's a purpose book too. And I think purpose books are evergreen for a reason, because people want to know their purpose in life. All of us do. But what I think is key in this book is just like with the getting unstuck part of the book, that you give practical steps to finding purpose, and that sets it apart from maybe another purpose type book. So what are some finding your purpose nuggets that you can talk about with our friends on the show?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of that kind of goes back to even the story I was sharing. You know, I think, like I said, we often feel this pressure to figure out our dreams, find our purpose. And I'm like, first of all, you need to stop thinking of your purpose as this thing you have to go find. Because I'm like, why do we say that? That's so weird. Like, do you not believe you were born with purpose? Do you not believe you have God-given purpose just breathed into you? You know, so this idea that it's something you have to go discover as if it's like a buried treasure is weird to me. So I think the first step is to like change your mentality of that, because we often think purpose is going to come from the position that I'm in, right? So I always kind of explain it like this. If I think my purpose is to be a podcaster or to be a small business owner or to be a mom, right? Or whatever the label is. Well, the problem is those things are eventually going to change. Like eventually podcasts probably won't be cool anymore, as sad as that is for us, right? Or eventually my kids will grow up and move away. Or eventually I might, you know, have a career shift, or my small business could change, or somebody might buy it, or anything could happen. And so it's weird, because I'm like, I think we often think when I find what I love to do, that's where my purpose lies. And so one of the kind of key arguments throughout the book is you actually have to look at it the other way around, because those circumstances could end or change relatively quickly. And does that mean your purpose is gone? Like, does that mean that this thing you've been just searching so hard for your whole life is gone if that specific position changes or you get let go or whatever? So if that's the case and that's what we're rooting purpose in, we're missing it. So then I kind of switch it and I say, you know, first, you have to understand that you actually bring purpose to whatever position you occupy. If you want to live a meaningful life, not just a, you know, empty and happy life, then you have to understand that what you bring to those spaces, the purpose that drives your life, for me, it's love God, love people, right? And that, I think, is every believer's ultimate purpose. And if that is what's driving every position you're in, then it really simplifies it. And it actually creates freedom. Instead of having this pressure to figure it out, we can actually still thrive when we have unfigured out dreams. I talk a lot about unfigured out dreams in the book, because I feel like we live in this like dream world where everybody's going after their dreams, the American dream. And I'm like so for it in so many ways. But I also want to validate that there are so many of us feeling like, I have unfigured out dreams. I have so many ideas. I don't know which one's the one. I don't know how to figure out like it. I don't know how to strike gold. Like, what if I mess it up? And I just want to like peel that lie off and say, you know what, you can fumble through some unfigured out dreams and still be living your purpose. It's not in the book. It's not in the, you know, Etsy store. It's not, it's just like, those are just avenues to carry it out. And when you're really thinking with that mentality, even that in itself can help you get unstuck. And so for me, it's a shift your mindset thing, change how you look at it, and then try stuff. Kind of like my mom said, like, once you kind of understand that your purpose isn't something you have to go find, you can start saying, okay, cool. Like, how can I just do something I enjoy, whether it's creating canvases or whether it's raising children or whatever it is, so that I can bring my purpose to that space, so that I can really ultimately just bring that to where I am. And I think that creates a lot of freedom. So for me, it's not like go discover your purpose. It's first understand your purpose and then just put it into action with whatever gifts you have, ideas you have. And I actually, with the book, there's a coaching course that comes with it. And there's a whole whiteboard session I do in this talking about how you discover who you're best able to serve, what you're going to be most passionate and compassionate about, given your circumstances, your experiences, all those things, how you can best serve them through what gifts and abilities you have. And really ultimately letting everything be driven by your why. So I kind of map that out and explain it on like a table of how to fill that in and discover that for yourself. And if you can find some places where you can put all those unique elements of you together, it's kind of like a purpose roadmap or something. I don't know what to call it, but it basically just says, when you can identify, you know your deeper why, and then you know who you're best able to serve, what you are most compassionate about, what you can really be empathetic about, how you can, you know, and then know your gifts, so how you can really serve them, whether that's through teaching or through, you know, building or creating or writing or, you know, math, I don't know, you know, there's so many different things, then you can find a certain space or different spaces that allow you to bring all those things together, even if it's not necessarily your full-time career. That's going to create fulfillment. It doesn't mean that's necessarily your purpose, but it's going to give you fulfillment, because it's the best area or space where you, with your unique combination of gifts and grief you walk through and experiences, can really bring all those things together into a space that really meets all of those. And so it'll be the most fulfilling way to carry out your purpose for you. Does that make sense?
Of course it does. Yes. I love all you're saying. Amen. 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 So I want to do something fun and quick and light for the last few minutes that we have together. People love the real stuff, as you know. So I'm just going to ask you a few questions. This is just like whatever is on the top of your head. It's really easy stuff. So best, worst subjects in high school, what were they?
Oh my gosh. I would say my worst was probably math. And my best was writing and like English class.
We're twins with that for sure. Okay. Are you more likely to scream over a spider or a snake?
Oh my gosh, both. I think it depends on Arizona, so I've seen my fair share of rattlesnakes. We actually lived there for a little while, so I think I, you know, have had more exposure to spiders in that, you know, snakes are a newer thing for me. We don't really have a whole lot of snakes in Indiana, so when we lived out there for a few months, I was like pretty terrified of snakes. But I would say on a more frequent basis, spiders, because I've seen them more. But I'm probably going to scream over both, to be honest.
Favorite candle scent? Do you have one that you love?
I don't know. I really love like the essential oils candles. I don't know if I have a specific scent that's my favorite, but I just love how clean those smell and how they're actually not toxic. So that's good. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I have one smell. I just know I love those.
Like a clean smell, probably though. You like a clean smell. Your idea of a perfect date night. What does that look like?
So I would say it needs to be combined with really good food, something creative or active, and then ending with something super relaxing. So for example, like we love this little Italian restaurant not too far from our house. So I would say our little like hometown Italian restaurant, and then something active like we have friends who like live on a farm and they've got those four-wheeler things that you can go ride around on. So something like that, or like my brother once suggested we use splatter paint. Just something kind of like you actually have something to create together. And then probably finishing off with just a really lazy movie. My husband makes the best popcorn. My dad has coined it Dooley popcorn. It's a real thing. So, so getting to finish the night off with a good movie and Dooley popcorn, like that to me sounds like the ideal date.
Yeah, I love it. All right. What's the number one quality you look for in a friend?
I think that's such a good question. You know, I think I really value meaningful conversation. And so as much as I value like humor and like lightheartedness and fun, I love someone that can also talk about real stuff and deep stuff. And so I think ultimately, as much as there's so many qualities I appreciate in friends, I often end up being closest or spending the most time with those who can really dive deep and be, you know, kind of just more vulnerable and get into the stuff that really matters. I'm just, my mom and I are the same way. We're like, we can only do small talk for so long. Let's talk about the meaningful stuff, the hard stuff, you know? So I think I really look for friendships that can kind of handle that and not be intimidated by it and open to it. So having friends with those qualities is really what I'm drawn to and what I end up really investing in.
I'm so on your page with that. So to have your heart, jeans have to be either A, comfortable, or B, cute. Which one?
I would probably say, I feel like, I don't know how much cuter you can really make jeans. So I would say comfortable. Like they have to fit right. I don't know about you, but I have like more, I've actually been told I have overdeveloped quads, which means that I've waist, and so I have a hard time with actually getting jeans to fit right. So when they fit right and they stay on, like I'm all about them. I'm all about them.
Yeah. I'm all about comfort at this point for sure. All right. Who is your celebrity bucket list dinner date?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I would say, is this like with my husband or is this like, this is kind of a confusing question.
Girl, you can do this however you want it. This is all Jordan all day long, whatever you want.
That is so funny. Okay. Let me think. I would say, I feel like I have several. I'm not super into pop culture, I'll be honest. I know like four celebrities' names total. But I think it would be, I don't know. I think like Morgan Freeman would be really interesting to talk to, you know, just with the amount of like the roles that he's
Oh, he'd be fantastic.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, there's so many, but I know like a grand total of five. So I'm just drawing from my bucket and I'm like, yeah, I think he'd be cool.
I love it. I love that. All right. Is there something that your husband says or does that calms you, motivates you, or inspires you?
So we kind of say he's the calm in my storm and the string to my balloon. So I would say, you know, just his encouragement and consistent discipline to help me rest. Because like I said, I'm a three, I'm always achieving, doing something, creating something, and always going. And so, you know, he really holds us accountable and puts practical ways to really unplug and rest in our lives. He bought us a home phone, which I'm pretty sure like no one has a home phone anymore, but we do because we're and it's fine. So, you know, he's like, I want to take at least a full 24 hours on the weekends to not be on our cell phones. And so that kind of just way he loves me, even though it frustrates me sometimes because I'm like, no, like we have work to do, you know, it really helps me be more refreshed and it actually allows me to be more fruitful and productive in what I actually do work on. And so he's really, really good about keeping me grounded and rested. And I think sometimes as much as it drives me crazy, it's like one of the biggest blessings too. So I would definitely have to say that.
That's good. If you could pick another name to have, what would it be?
Well, my mom almost named me Wendy when I was a kid, like the restaurant. And I was like, I don't think I would fit that at all. It's just not my personality. So I think, if I had to pick another name, I don't know if I have another name that would be right off the top of my head, but a name that I really like is I really like the name Adeline. I don't know why. I think it's just a really beautiful name.
That's so pretty.
Not sure if that would fit my personality either, but I do really like that name.
You do look like a Jordan, so, but Adeline's very pretty too. All right, here's the last question. You could say one more thing about Jesus. If you could only say one more thing, what would you say?
He loves you. And that's not very complicated. It's just the truth.
So good. Thank you for being on with me, Jordan. I've enjoyed our 2 days together and all the many things that you've written in the book, Own Your Everyday, and just all that you're doing online. I'm grateful and I'm excited to see what Jesus does with your life.
Thank you so much. It's been so fun being on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Jesus Over Everything with Lisa Whittle. If you like what you're listening to, share it with a friend by letting them know about what we do here so they too can be inspired and glean from this community. And hey, if you haven't already, leave a 5-star review on iTunes. It helps so much in making this show what it is and continuing to spread the word about us. You guys are the best.